Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Old Fashioned Golf is creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel, polos, hats, towels, right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All their gear is extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show off your love for this great state on and off the golf course. Each step in the creation of Old Fashioned Golf has been centered around providing golfers an exceptional product that will sustain the elements from the first tee to the last green. Get your Old Fashioned Golf gear at www.oldfashionedgolf.com. And don't forget, they also do custom polos. So outfit your team or business in unique style with the help of OFG. That's Old Fashioned Golf. Along with Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here. It is Talking.Golf back on a Friday as we record here, entering the weekend. It'll be the this is the last day of September, Gary D'Amato. Tomorrow starts the first day of October. We've got a lot to unpack here with Mason Schmidtke of Sheboygan committing to Marquette. We've got some great stuff going on at the Korn Ferry Tour, first stage qualifiers around the country. But my friend, you're not doing any unpacking. It's time to pack. You're going to Italy, man. You're going to Rome.
Yeah, Rob, I can't wait. I leave tomorrow morning. I leave Saturday morning. We're taping this on Friday. And I'm going with the PGA of America contingent representing the Golf Writers Association of America. And I'm attending a year-to-go Ryder Cup event. Of course, the Ryder Cup in 2023 is at Marco Simone Golf Club outside of Rome. And I'll be traveling with some members of the PGA of America, our friend Julius Mason in communications, and Zach Johnson, the U.S. Ryder Cup captain. Luke Donald also is attending. There will be a captain's press conference. There will be an exhibition on Marco Simone with the captains. And I get to play the course, Rob, so I'm bringing my clubs. Can't wait.
That's amazing. You know, you think back, Gary, to the year-out news conference at Whistling Straits when we thought the Ryder Cup was going to be played in 2020. And yeah. How much has changed in the world? And how much has changed in the world of golf? It's really staggering, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. I'll never forget that day. It was an Irish day at Whistling Straits, Rob. It was, you know, 45 degrees and raining and windy. And Padraig Harrington, I remember remarking how he felt so much at home because it was a typical Irish, nice summer day in Ireland, he said. That was a long time ago. Just so much has developed in the golf world since then. Of course, LIV, nobody knew, had heard of, I mean, LIV wasn't even a concept, I don't think, back then, LIV Golf. And so a lot of things have changed, especially, and that has affected the team dynamics, of course.
Well, and even going back to a year ago when we played the delayed Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits, we heard rumblings that something was happening with LIV. But, you know, I don't know if we really appreciated the fact that we had all hands on deck. You know, both teams were at full strength. Those were the best players that the point system had, that we weren't eliminating players because they had defected or these guys had defected or somebody was hurt. I felt it was like a, you know, it was a who's who of everybody that, you know, shoot, they left the reigning PGA champion off the team, Phil Mickelson, because he just didn't have enough points. He didn't play well enough the rest of the year. I mean, those are, you know, first world problems compared to really what we're facing now. I would think that this week in Rome, you're going to hear a lot of, whether it's on the record, off the record, a lot of conjecture about what LIV means and what we can expect in, next year when the Ryder Cup reconvenes for the first time since Whistling Straits. It's going to be totally different there too.
Yeah, so many things have happened in the last 5 or 6 months, Rob, to throw a wrench into the PGA Tour and into how we look at teams and how we look at guys, you know, going over and playing in another league. I think that's going to be I'm sure that will be a line of questioning for both Zach Johnson and Luke Donald. They're going to field a number of questions about, you know, the point system, how they're going to pick guys, if LIV guys are going to be eligible to play for Europe. It doesn't look like they will be for the United States, but there's a lot of questions hanging out there. And I don't know we'll get too many answers because I think this is a very fluid situation, Rob, and who knows what it's going to look like in 6 months.
do you think we'll at least get an answer on the timeline of, you know, are we really going to wait out the judicial process to find out whether LIV guys are eligible for, you know, whether it's the majors or team events like the President's Cup, the Ryder Cup?
You're right, because that could take a long time. I mean, that could, that very, very well could be decided in the courts after the Ryder Cup. So, yeah, I'm sure some of those things they're going to have to, they've certainly thought about it, and they're going to have to answer questions about that here in a few days. Tuesday, I believe Tuesday afternoon is the, in Rome is the press conference.
You've covered a number of Ryder Cups, and you've seen firsthand the team dynamic within each country, and, you know, or each side, you know, the Europeans, it's no longer just one country, but the Europeans, you know, are united with their group, the Americans united with their group. What could you imagine, and maybe, you know, some people will have an opinion, division within those two elements and what that would mean for a Ryder Cup? It just seems like part of the Ryder Cup is one side versus the other. But even though there have been some grumblings, we go back to the team that Tom Watson captained. I mean, there have been grumblings in the room, but you come together as a group, and you're not, it was never that personal. It was more of a managerial situation type of criticism that I think have afflicted certain captains on each side. But boy, to have a Bryson DeChambeau and a Brooks Koepka come back now, I mean, might be even more divisive than it would have been last year had they not gotten along and ultimately hugged at the end of the competition.
And it's really interesting, Rob, because some of our readers might not know this, or listeners, a lot of them will, but, you know, the PGA Tour is a different entity entirely from the PGA of America, which owns and runs the Ryder Cup. So how the PGA Tour has handled things might not necessarily be how the PGA of America handles things. And we're going to have to explore some of those things going forward here. But I don't foresee a situation in which LIV players will be welcome to play on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. I don't see that happening. I do see it as a possibility in Europe, which would be very interesting to have Ian Poulter and Sergio Garcia, guys like that, coming back to play in the Ryder Cup with guys who have they been bickering with basically for the last 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, it sure would. It'd be, and especially on European soil, to hear potentially boos directed at your own players.
Yeah.
Crowd from people who do not agree with the LIV movement. Let's put that aside for a minute, Gary. Part of what you're doing this week historically would be you would hear a lot of questions about course setup and about the recent decided advantage among the Europeans on when the matches have been held on their side of the pond. On those two points, what do you expect to hear in terms of how the course will be set up based on, you know, perhaps maybe what they learned so successfully at Le Golf National in France, and, you know, what do we expect in terms of the other things that normally, the normal business of the Ryder Cup?
Yeah, I think from a course setup standpoint, what we saw in Paris last time it was on foreign soil, Rob, was pretty deep rough, especially out in the landing area at about 315 to 320 yards where some of the American bombers hit it. I think you'll see that at Marco Simone. They'll pinch in the landing areas. They want to negate, generally the Americans have been the bigger hitters and they want to negate that advantage. Europe does. And I think you'll see slower greens. The greens in Paris were pretty slow compared to the greens at Whistling Straits last year. And I think the Europeans feel that they putt better on slower, slightly slower greens, and the Americans putt a little better on fast greens. So I think you'll see slow green speeds and slow, we're talking relative, you know, sure, in the 11 to 12 foot on the stimp meter, as opposed to 12, 13 and higher on the stimp meter in America. So I think those two things are, I think we'll see that. I don't know if I'll necessarily see that when I play the course, because, you know, in a year it's going to play differently than it does now, certainly.
The two captains involved, you mentioned them, Zach Johnson, Luke Donald. I don't know if you could get much more Midwestern than that, given that one captain has to be from Europe, but Luke Donald went to school at Northwestern. I know a lot of our Illinois golf writing colleagues have anointed him one of Chicago's second sons, and Zach Johnson from, you know, the cornfields of Iowa, and yeah, been a guy that has been staunchly supportive of the John Deere Classic, And that'll be, I guess, as we bridge the gap between the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits and now all the Ryder Cups going forward, that'll be a nice bridge away from Whistling Straits. We at least have two somewhat Midwesterners involved in running the two teams that'll be competing next year in Rome.
Similar personalities, I think, too. Both guys very level-headed, low-key, you know, not very excitable or demonstrative on the golf course. Neither one of them has been throughout their great careers. Both of them have had wonderful careers. And I think they'll lead, I think their leadership style will reflect that. I think they're going to be low-key. They're not going to be, they'll be a little bit like Steve Stricker was last year. Steve let the guys play. He stayed out of their way. He didn't, you know, make them do a bunch of stuff they didn't want to do. And I think you'll see that from these two guys too, these two respective captains.
So you leave tomorrow morning, Gary. You were telling me before we started the podcast, it's Milwaukee to Atlanta and Atlanta to Rome. I don't know if even Delta has enough golf movies to last that long. And I think you kind of buried the lead there in our previous question. You're bringing your clubs along.
Yes, I am. I get to play Marco Simone with some people from the BMW group. They've invited me and our friend Alex Maselli. Alex is the treasurer for the Golf Writers Association. He's on this trip also. So it'll be three or four, maybe a few more media types playing Marco Simone. And then they hustle us back to the hotel for the news conference on Tuesday. So really looking forward to this, Rob.
Well, in addition to, you know, formerly being the voice of humor occasionally on the Golf Channel, Alex, longtime Steve Stricker correspondent for the Janesville Gazette, that he would always offer his services to our friend Dave Wiedewert in Janesville and would keep the Edgerton faithful informed on their native son. So what a good guy. You got to be looking forward to this. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, I can't wait. Hopefully the trip goes smoothly, and it's a packed itinerary, and I have to bring a couple of sport coats and ties. There's a couple formal dinners where I'll be sitting with Ryder Cup Europe people and golf writers from across the pond and get to know them a little bit too. So this is, I hope to get a lot out of this trip, Rob. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
And for our listeners too, Gary, I mean, this really kicks off a year's worth of this kind of activity for you. There might be times in 2023 where, you know, we might not see you at some of the events that you normally get to. Maybe just briefly describe what is in store for you as the president of the Golf Writers Association of America.
Yeah, I hopefully, unless there's a coup or something, I will be taking over as president of the Golf Writers at the Masters in April. And from then on, I have, it's really almost a part-time job, Rob, but there's a lot to do as president of this organization. And you know, I'll be around Wisconsin a lot next year. We've got the Senior Open, and there's a lot of things to cover. But there are a few times I might have to go to PGA Tour events. I'll have to go to the U.S. Open next year because we have a meeting there, a board meeting. So it's going to be I thought I was going to ease into retirement, Rob, but that's not the case.
No, not at all. And of course, I know you've told the story many times when people have asked about, you know, Wisconsin.golf, Killarney Golf Media. I mean, the reason we're here is that a lot of newspapers have stopped covering golf. So in addition to leading the people who still are, you're kind of also shepherding a group of people who are still concerned about making sure that the golf stories get told in a fair and unbiased way, you know, by, you know, the journalists that have been the backbone of our organization for many, many years. I think, you know, you really come in at a crossroads at a key time in the history of the Golf Writers.
Yeah, and it's going to be the 50-year anniversary while I'm president. So, you know, the dinner will be extra special. We have an annual dinner at Augusta during the Masters. That's going to be extra special. We're moving to a new convention center that's just been built in Augusta. And there's a lot to do. And you're right. I don't think there's ever been a more important time for access to players. That seems to be getting pinched all the time. You know, locker rooms closed during the pandemic. They're opening again now, but there's always little wars to fight like that and little battles to fight to improve working conditions for journalists at golf tournaments.
Well, we're going to give Gary a couple seconds here to figure out how to order a brandy old fashioned in Italian. And that gives time to talk about the fact that Talking.Golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Old Fashioned Golf is creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel, polos, hats, towels, right in Green Bay. All their gear is extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show off your love for this great state, both on and off the golf course. Get your old-fashioned gear at www.oldfashionedgolf.com. And don't forget, they do custom polos so you can outfit your team or business in unique style with the help of OFG. As I alluded to at the outset of Talking Golf today, Gary, we have a busy news day at the end of a busy news week. But let's start first with a huge recruit for Marquette University, Mason Schmidt-Gett of Sheboygan North, the now reigning Ray Fisher State Amateur Champ, first high school kid to win that event ever, is going to Marquette. He told me, Gary, that he chose Marquette over the University of Wisconsin in South Dakota. It really came down to Marquette and Wisconsin. And you and I know from talking to Mike Wilson that he's taken a number of steps to try to up the competitive level of the Badgers quickly after some lean years. It worked last spring at the Big Ten Championships, one of their best finishes in a number of years. But it's also worked this fall with, I believe, 13 guys on the roster. They've got that internal competition. They're inching their way up the leaderboard. That's the good news. The bad news is he was told recently, according to Mason, that he would have to dial back the roster to 10 guys after this year, and that he would the offer to Mason from Wisconsin was one that would kick in 2024. So either a redshirt year, a gray shirt, or some deferred enrollment type situation. And that, in addition to what he saw at Marquette, and you and I know from, seeing the different generations of golfers go through there, it's really a big family, past, present, and now future, with Mason coming in among all the, Golden Eagles. So a big, big recruiting win for Steve Bailey at Marquette.
Yeah, that had to be a tough choice for Mason. Both great programs, really good coaches, and I watched Mason play a lot this summer, Rob, and I was very, very impressed by him. And I knew that he, you broke the news to me today. I didn't know Mason had committed to Marquette, and I think that's great. It's great for Bailey. It's great for Mason, but he had a great year, Rob, and I just was so impressed with him at the Ray Fisher, how he closed that thing out with all the pressure on him. And he just played those last few holes like a seasoned veteran. And he's going to add a lot to that Marquette program.
You wrote the story, Gary, after the Ray Fisher win, about the way that Mason handled himself on that final day, the things he said to you afterwards. And, we've interviewed, hundreds of golfers, men, women, juniors, professional, amateur, and I got that sense again today talking to him. I mean, he was more candid and open about his recruiting than really any high school kid I've talked to in a long, long time. And it's important, Gary. I mean, a lot of guys would maybe not divulge the challenges that Mike Wilson had, but I believe, and I'm hopeful that Mike Wilson will agree that I mean, not everything is as transparent in the recruiting process as it maybe needs to be. I think what Mason had to do to decide between Marquette and Wisconsin is going to help other guys in his class, in the next class. I mean, all these coaches have these challenges. I mean, they still answer to a boss. They still work in an office where you've got a college football coach, and dozens of assistants and personnel that really drive the machine. And, I mean, you can't begin to imagine the challenges, but boy, the way Mason described all that was really eloquent. And then, the fact that he visited Marquette during National Marquette Weekend, kind of centered around the Marquette-Butler basketball game. Mason's going to play basketball again this fall, or this winter, at Sheboygan North. He played as a sophomore on the JV team. So he gets one chance to play golf with kids that he started playing basketball with in fourth grade. And he sees a lot of similarities between that group. I kind of imagine the Sandlot kids from the movie Sandlot, playing baseball from a young age on, and what he's seen at Marquette, because he was talking about it and you and I were there. I mean, the state open in that playoff with Hunter Eichhorn involved in not only all the current Marquette players that were there watching, but the former Marquette players that were there watching. I mean, he was blown away by the fact that you know, these guys that leave Marquette, they really care. And I mean, it's not just lip service. They really, really care.
They do. And same goes for Wisconsin. And it shows in the Dairyland Duel when, you know, all these alumni come back from both programs and go at it tooth and nail, and they all get along too. But yeah, Marquette is, as you said, like one big family. Steve Daly fosters that environment, and Mason stepping into a great situation. Steve really takes care of his players. I think, you know, he's told me that Hunter Eichhorn is almost like a son to him, and he really cares about those guys. All coaches do, but I think Steve really cares about his players as people too, beyond their golf talent, which a lot of coaches do. But it's a good situation for Mason, I think, and for Marquette.
And absolutely, and it kind of segues into our next topic, and that's the Stage 1 qualifying on the Corn Ferry Tour. And speaking of Hunter Eichhorn, he comes up out today with a great final round at Chardon, Ohio, a final round, 500 par 67, and he finishes T5 and easily inside the top 25 that qualify for Stage 2. After opening 71-73, he closes 68-67. I don't believe he had anyone local on the bag. I'm not sure if his mom or grandpa were in the gallery. And you need to kind of know when you're Hunter Eichhorn that you've got your people behind you, and to have a guy like Steve Bailey, you know, just a phone call away, you know, has to help. I know Austin Konzorski was also there, his former Marquette teammate. Austin with a final round 74 today, finishes T56, so he will not move on. In relation to Hunter Eichhorn, I guess, you know, Steve Bailey took a chance on Hunter that maybe at the point in which Hunter was coming up through the junior ranks, not many people did, and it paid off. And the thing that's always my number one thing in when I talk to, you know, the athletic side of recruiting to parents and golfers and the like is, do you have a coach, you know, in mind that's going to make you better? Steve Bailey's making guys better. And whether it's himself in the things, the way he teaches them to approach the game, or his support staff, his assistant coaches, many of whom have gone on to bigger and better things. I mean, the structure is there for guys to go to Marquette and continue that ascension to, you know, possibly playing professional golf, because so many have given it a shot.
Yeah. And, you know, Hunter, he's ready for this, Rob. And I think that closing 68-67 shows what he's made of. You know, Bailey's told me many times, you know, Hunter might not have the prettiest swing in the world. But he just doesn't care. He doesn't care about his TrackMan numbers. He doesn't care what it looks like. His whole goal is to get the ball in the hole faster than anyone else. And he's been very, very good at that at every level he's played at. I see no reason why it wouldn't continue. And like Steve says, he's a gamer. I mean, when the lights come on, he produces, he puts up numbers, and now it gets tougher, Rob. You know, now the cream of the crop goes on to the second stage, and he's got to keep playing like this, as do all the guys. Rob, I'm looking at this list. I think we have 7 Wisconsin guys, or guys with Wisconsin ties anyway, in the second stage. That might be a record. I don't remember that many ever reaching second stage.
No, and after only having one last year in, was it one to first stage last year, wasn't it? Or was it one? No, it was one to second stage in Zach Burry. And I haven't seen Zach's name in any of this stuff, so I'm not sure if he would have gotten a pass in the second stage by getting there last year or not. We believe that both Harry Ott and Thomas Longbella, by virtue of their finishes on the Order of Merit at PGA Tour Canada, are on to the second stage. I saw Harrison Ott withdrawn. He didn't withdraw that. He was withdrawn from the Illinois field last week. So obviously, you know, they all want to play on the Corn Ferry Tour, so we expect to see them. We don't know until the fields are posted, folks, what, you know, who's going where, but we do know that, you know, as Gary said, we've got George Kneiser last week punched his ticket to the next stage in qualifying. And today in Lincoln, Nebraska, Wilderness Ridge, Sam Anderson out of Stoughton finishes 5th, the final round 72. He finishes at 6 under. And then a couple other guys, Taylor Kozer, a journeyman mini tour guy out of Rice Lake, really nice guy. Got to meet him at one of the pre-qualifiers for a PGA Tour event out in California a couple years ago. And he's been grinding away, and he shoots a final round 69 to finish at T20. I thought it was just the top 25 and they were going to play it off, but it is 29 going from this one. So it was 25 in ties. Griffin Barella, the former Badger, he advances with a final round 72. He also finished T20. And then a couple of really close calls. Ricky Heerden out of Green Bay had four birdies in a row on the back nine, but then finished bogey, par, bogey for a 69. He misses by one shot of getting to the second stage. And then Jordan Hahn, the former Badger, who's played Korn Ferry, he's played PGA Tour Canada this past summer. I think he's maybe even dabbled in Latin America. But final round 73 for Jordan. He dropped six spots to finish T39. Matt Tolan, the last Wisconsin golfer in the Nebraska field, final round 73, he finishes T51. So three there, Hunter Eichhorn, George Kneiser, and then the three guys who are exempt. Pretty good showing, Gary.
Yeah, and I really feel for Ricky and anybody who misses advancing in Korn Ferry Tour qualifying by one shot, Rob. You just, I can't imagine how you beat yourself up, you know, replaying your rounds and thinking, you know, I missed a 3-foot putt here, or I hit an OB there, or just one shot. And now he has to wait until next year. I mean, now there are places for him to play. There are many tours, and he can, you know, go up to Canada if he qualifies in the spring, but it's got to just be, you got to want to tear your hair out just to miss by one shot. That's, you'd almost rather miss by 10 than by one.
And Ricky's played far less the last couple of years than he had, you know, the initial, you know, stage of trying to get into there. I think this year he played a few Dakota's Tour events. He's based down here in the Phoenix area. And I see him from time to time at some of the events. And, you know, I think he's taking a slightly different approach where he's trying to be as prepared, you know, fundamentally for the Q school as, you know, as he is with the, you know, rounds under his belt, competitive rounds. So it was an approach that almost worked this year. You know, you look at that scorecard in the back nine, Gary, and he starts out with a birdie on 10, bogey on 11, rattles off four birdies in a row through 15, bogey 16, only par in the back nine was 17, and then bogey's 18. And, you know, he was fairly early in the draw today. And so you don't know at that point what the number is going to be. You know, I've covered a number of these Q school stages, and you know, everyone's, you know, they'll occasionally come to the side and ask me, what do you think the number is going to be? And I, you know, especially if you're, you know, before the halfway point in the draw, who knows? It could be, you know, people could go nuts. I mean, this was a very interesting, location down in Lincoln, Nebraska, because you had, I think the low round of the day today was a 6-under round, but then the next lowest was 3-under. And, you know, again, I equate, you know, the Q school to sometimes playing the slot machines in Vegas. You just don't know what numbers are going to pop up and when. You know, it was George Kneiser last week. I think he was 72, 73, 70, 71. And that's about as consistent a card over 72 holes as you're going to find at a Q school. Because as you said, Gary, I mean, when nerves enter into play and when it's, you know, basically it's a job interview, you know, the body performs in different ways and the nerves, you know, manifest in different ways. So that was pretty impressive. But you know, this is the grind. And I guess what we're going to be going back to the old PGA Tour Q school after this year when we go back to the calendar schedule. So there still will be there'll be a Korn Ferry, I guess, a Q school or some element that's going to allow, you know, the golfers to continue that climb from Latin America to Canada to Korn Ferry to PGA. But I think there's also going to be a few, you know, Q school type things for the PGA Tour like there used to be. We'll find out about that, you know, as time comes. Right now, you know, I think everybody that's involved here is taking advantage of this opportunity. As you said, seven guys from Wisconsin onto stage two of Q school. And then that brings in another element, Gary, because I know the first wave of them, you're talking Albuquerque, New Mexico, Dothan, Alabama, Valdosta, Georgia. And then there's two more the second week in Murrieta, California and Plantation, Florida. In fact, I think Plantation, Florida might be at the same course where they're having LPGA Tour second stage qualifying the same week. I know that a lot of the guys do their homework, try to figure out what grasses are and what courses at that time of year to best replicate the grasses they grew up on. To me, it's as much science as it is competition, because you're trying to get yourself comfortable with, you know, getting to that next level. This is by far the most complex process of anything we cover in golf.
It is. And you're right, Rob. The type of grass these guys play on is huge, especially when you come up from Wisconsin, the Upper Peninsula, and in Hunter's case, and you're playing on bent grass all summer, and then you go down and have to play on Bermuda. It's different. It takes some getting used to. And hopefully, if these guys say, for instance, find out they're going to Dothan, Alabama, hopefully they are able to get down there a few days early and, you know, practice on that type of grass. Because to you or me, Rob, it doesn't make much of a difference, but to those guys, it does.
No, spongy Bermuda rough, Gary, I can tell you from first-person experience, is a lot like bent grass rough that just hasn't been mowed in a week. So you're going to lose the ball in both of them, and we're not going to be able to get it out with anything, you know, north of a wedge.
That's right. That's right.
Gary, the other thing posted to the site here this afternoon, my regional report card, WI Girls Golf Regionals in the books, top four teams, top four girls. Not on those teams, on to the sectional level. A couple of performances to highlight. Nora Roberts of Union Grove. She's headed to North Dakota State next year. She shoots a 500 par 67, bogey free, makes a 12-foot par putt on the final hole to do that. And she wins the regional at Ives Grove Golf Links in Sturtevant. And her Union Grove Broncos fire, I believe it was a 314 to edge Westosha Central, the defending state champs, by two. We've gotten to see Nora at state amateurs, state opens. Again, a young career that's just beginning to flourish. But this rivalry with the twins from Westosha Central and their two teams is really setting the stage. I mean, boy, when those girls get to college, Gary, they're going to be so battle tested from just that rivalry alone that they're going to be, you know, I mean, they're going to be a benefit to whatever coach is able to land the Walker twins. And obviously, North Dakota State's getting a good one in Nora Roberts.
Yeah, and 67 anywhere is great. Ives Grove, she shot it, right?
Yes.
Which is fairly wide open, but also very windy, usually very windy there. I don't know what kind of wind conditions she played in to shoot 67, but I'll tell you what, that is one fine score for anybody, let alone a high school player.
And they played that at 5,400 yards. I know that there was some discussion. I tweeted out earlier this week, Gary, that, you know, it's WI Regional Week when you start getting texts from coaches as the tournament's going on, and and others about the course setup. And there was one location that was set up long and it was set up difficult. Someone described the pins as greenskeeper's revenge, and it was for a Division II regional. And I said, yeah, boy, sometimes people lose sight of the fact that, you know, at the end of the day, even though they call it a regional championship, it's a regional qualifier into what's a sectional championship. The sectional championship, Gary, as you know, is where everything means everything. I mean, you've got, you're the best of your area of the state, and you're trying to go on to the state tournament. And there's so much on the line there. And having had a daughter that went through it, it is kind of like the Q school. It's a different pressure. You see different outcomes, you see different emotions. And you just hope that both the families that have kids involved, first and foremost, and the girls themselves here in the fall, you know, allow themselves to enjoy the fact that they're going to be at a sectional with a chance to go to the state tournament, and absolutely enjoy every minute of it. A couple other cute little stories. I made our most improved player of the week, McKenna Lowe of Kaukauna. Now, last year at the regional, in her WI debut as a freshman, she shot a 97. The other day at Reed Muni in Appleton, she shot a 76 out of the number two spot for the Galloping Ghosts, and won the sectional individually. Kaukauna beat Appleton North to go on. But Gary, there's far more to that story. As she did last year, McKenna Lowe also running cross country for the fifth ranked in Division I Kaukauna girls cross country team. She last week finished seventh at the Manitowoc Invite at Meadow Links Golf Course. Of course, you know, you run on golf courses on the weekend and play on them during the week. And she'll be competing this week at Middleton High School around the high school building in an event featuring the number two ranked team and number eight ranked team in Division I. So she's got pressure on the weekend of one kind, pressure during the week of another. Kaukauna hasn't been to the state tournament since 2018. and she's got her team in position to do so. I love multi-sport athletes, Gary, but you know, we live in an age where dual sport athletes in the same season are about as rare as a persimmon wood.
Yeah, you don't see that almost hardly at all, if ever. And we were joking before we started the podcast, Rob, that McKenna maybe should think about a future in speed golf, because combining running with golf, she's good at both. I think she'd probably be one of the best speed golfers in America on the women's side if she decided to go that route.
Absolutely. And last but not least, the sister duo of Peyton and Madison Haugen, who performed so well at the WPGA Junior Championship earlier this summer. And we're looking forward to playing together for the first time as teammates at Brookfield East. Peyton, the freshman, makes her WIA tournament debut with a 268 at Mequon Golf Club in Mequon. And combined with Madison, who shot 75, leads Brookfield East to the team title there with a 315. And they are very quietly rounding into form behind Union Grove and Wasotia Central. It should also be noted that two other sisters are key to the Spartans' attack this fall. Senior Josie Clegg and her sophomore sister Macy, they both shot rounds of 86 over at Mequon and finished T6. And got a text from Peyton when I asked her about the Cleggs, and she said that the night before regionals, the range at the course where they practiced was closed. So Peyton and Madison decided to go to another range afterward, and when they arrived there, Macy was already there hitting. And the neat thing about high school golf, Gary, is a lot of kids who maybe we don't see a lot of, and maybe we don't know how much golf means to them, it at some point means something during the high school season, because you're representing other girls on your team and your school, your community. And a pretty neat story when you see, you know, the number three, you know, or number four girl in the lineup at the range before two very decorated athletes. And, you know, those are the kind of things that sometimes foreshadow great success down the road, because if you don't put in the work, you're not going to reap the rewards.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like hearing that. And, you know, we've talked about my schedule, Rob. What about your schedule? You're jumping on a plane pretty soon and coming back to Wisconsin again, aren't you?
I am. A week from, what is that? A week from Friday. It is Friday. This Friday, Gary.
Friday. I may be there you go.
The airport when you get back.
We'll cross paths.
That'd be something. We'll do the podcast at baggage claim. So I'll be coming back next Friday. The WIAC championships are at Reedsburg Country Club. I'll catch the final 2 days of those, and then go over to University Ridge cover the 2 days of the state high school tournament. After leaving the Dells area last weekend, Gary, following my daughter's wedding, I was a little bit startled to see Reedsburg Country Club the day after we left posting, here's why we have to have frost delays, because there was frost in the Dells. And my in-laws said that it got down to about 34 the night after we left. And I'm going, oh, okay, we're just about to that finish line of the girls' high school season. I hope we get some good weather at U Ridge and at Reedsburg for the WIAC championship. But I'll tell you what, I got great weather yesterday on Thursday. It was Charles Schwab Cup Championship Media Day out at Phoenix Country Club. And we got to play. I played with a guy from the Phoenix Cardinals writer for ESPN Nation, and a guy from AP, and then one of the TV guys from the local ABC affiliate here. And as we're playing, then they had Stephen Elker, the number one golfer on the Schwab Cup point standings, who lives here in the Phoenix area up in Fountain Hills, jumping around from group to group. And so we got to talk to Stephen, I'm really, you know, geared up for the Schwab Cup in November, because there's a pretty good chance Steve Stricker is going to play. Both Nikki and his daughters have put some pressure on to maybe give it a shot this year. But I'll tell you what, there's not a nicer guy. Stephen Elker had a conflict during the AmFam Championship week, so we weren't able to see him play. This is really his first full year on the tour after, you know, qualifying as a Cinderella story and now winning three times this year, once last year. What a nice guy. And he is just living the dream of being the number one guy on the Schwab Cup. He's one of five guys that have won three times this year. Of course, Jerry and Kelly and Steve Stricker are on that list, but it's shaping up to be a great end of the season there. And as we talked about last week on the podcast, Mario Tiziani with the great showing at Pebble Beach up to 63. I read they did a big thing on Mario on PGAtour.com. And, you know, he mentioned that Paul Stankowski, who finished ahead of him at Pebble Beach, gets the top 10 exemption into Furyk and Friends. But, you know, we won't know which is next weekend. We won't know the final field on there until later today, and whether Mario might get an exemption. But, you know, he's in great position to at least get into the playoffs. We got a lot to look forward to. And, you know, we're on the final day of September, and neither one of us is looking at winding down anytime soon.
No, that's for sure, Rob. And just to let you know, I did play golf this morning and there was a frost delay at the bog, Rob. So you're right. We are in that time of year when we're going to start having frost delays. But the weather looks pretty good for the next 7, 8, 9 days. I don't see any rain in the forecast. Temperatures in the 60s. So I think when you get back here, fingers crossed, you know, you're going to have some nice weather for the high school sectionals and state championships.
I'm going to hold you to that. And okay. Gary, we actually do have breaking news, given that we've I'm back on the unlimited Zoom call time, so we're past that. We're well past 30 minutes this week, buddy. And since we're past 5 o'clock on the East Coast, we do have the field for Furyk and Friends. And yes, Mario Tiziani did get a sponsor's exemption. So it'll be Mario Tiziani, Steve Stricker, Jerry Kelly, all in the field next week down in Florida, I guess, weather permitting, for the Furyk and Friends. That is another opportunity for Mario to better his position in that Schwab Cup points race. I think it's what, 72 to start, then it goes down to, I believe, 56 and then 36 for the finals or something like that. And you know, but points double. Steven Elker, you know, really made his hay in the playoffs and was able to move up and get to the finals, even with limited status most of the year last year. And then, of course, finished second at the Schwab Cup Championships. And Gary, a little bit of trivia to leave you here on your flight to Rome. Do you remember who won the Charles Schwab Cup Championship last year?
Boy. I for some reason, I want to say Scott McCarron, but that might have been 2 years ago.
That might have been. It's funny that none of us remember this, but it was Phil Mickelson.
Oh, my goodness. Did he really?
Isn't them? I didn't realize that. I had no idea. They were at the little press conference that we had after we were done playing yesterday. They made a veiled reference to Phil Mickelson and didn't name him. And I'm going, man, that was a year ago.
Wow.
Again, it goes to the point that a lot has happened in a year. A lot has happened in 2 years. And I tell you, as you get ready to hop on a plane to Rome, I think you're going to get the full, you know, the appreciation for, you know, where we're at as a sport, because you're looking at, you know, two of the governing bodies that really dictate what goes on with the RNA and the PGA of America. And I think it's going to be fascinating what you hear. You're going to write a few stories over there. And of course, you know, I'm sure we'll see a lot as the itinerary unfolds for you and for the PGA contingent heading over there. I wish you nothing but safe travels, my friend.
Yes, you too, Rob. Have a great time when you get back to Wisconsin, and have fun covering the girls at the state championship.
That sounds good. And as Gary alluded to, because of his travels and my travels, we're probably looking at midweek after the girls state tournament when we have our next Talking Dot Golf. I might try to do a little something ahead of the state high school girls, but rest assured, we'll have plenty of information for you the next time we get together here on Talking Dot Golf. And when we do, we'll be able to remind you again that Talking Dot Golf is sponsored by our friends at Old Fashioned Golf. Old Fashioned Golf is creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel, that's polos, hats, and towels, right in Green Bay. All their gear is extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show off your love for this great state, both on and off the golf course. Each step in the creation of Old Fashioned Golf has been centered around providing golfers an exceptional product that will sustain the elements from the first tee to the last green. Get your Old Fashioned Golf gear at www.oldfashionedgolf.com. And don't forget, they do custom polos. So outfit your team or business in unique style with the help of OFG. That's oldfashionedgolf.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.